what it is, a nice fresh reminder that these things happen. You know, teams do come back, and we've been on the other side of one, you know. And these things happen. These things are possible. Well, obviously, they're not possible if you don't start with one. So, you know, that's where we're at here tonight.
All right, the fan pregame Tuesday night, Elish and Justin, four Stanley Cup playoff games tonight. All four have elimination scenarios. Leafs, Preds, Jets, Islanders could all be booking tee times as early as tomorrow morning.
Yeah, more competition for these tee times we're trying to get. Yeah. No, that's not good. Yeah, four big games on the network tonight, but no series doing drama quite like Boston, Toronto. For that reason, we'll have Andrew Raycroft of Nesson on in a moment to talk Leafs, Bruins, the Matthews thing, the Nylander things, Marner things, all the things, Leafs, Bruins.
Splitting the back half of our show, we'll have visits in both Winnipeg and Vancouver. Quick hits with John Bartlett and Thomas Drantz as they tee us up for the Canadian teams at home. One looking to close out a series, one looking to extend theirs.
And the Jays back in action. We'll go over that in Best Bets. But yeah, first, this is a pretty big game for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Game 5 in Boston tonight. Not expecting to see Austin Matthews, although that, I guess, is not for sure yet. But yeah, this is maybe a moment that is of the defining variety tonight for Toronto.
Yeah, this could be the end of the core four as we know it. It could be the end of the Shanna plan, Keefe as head coach of the Maple Leafs. It feels like tonight is a huge pivot point, whether the Leafs find a way to push a game 6 and maybe Joseph Woll being the new face in net helps inspire a little bit of resilience and drive and passion that the Maple Leafs have been lacking. Or it could really be the start of a selling off or a changing of the guards. It's an interesting way to approach a game, right? Whether you're going to show up and play for something, play with something, or maybe your attitude and your work ethic is going to show that you've kind of given up.
Yeah, I mean, we can't fully dissect this Leaf team until, you know, it's over. And it might be trending that way. But yeah, a lot of conversations about the future are happening now. I just think the idea that, yeah, maybe this is the end, maybe for that reason, like it's not the worst thing because at least you're reaching some sort of pivot point. But I just think it's a little naive to believe that, yeah, they'll just be able to snap their fingers and actually enact change. I mean, I'm looking at this cap friendly earlier and what, the top 8 forwards have versions of no movement clauses. And I go, there's a couple guys who are coming off the books just organically, but they have locked themselves in to a lot of these deals. They've locked themselves into the core four, no movement clauses for all of them. I just don't know how you could possibly get out from underneath the John Tavares contract. I don't see anyone taking on that salary unless you're packaging a lot with it. And do you want to do that? And I guess the Mitch Marner question too, everyone's like, yeah, if you just decide to alienate him, he'll want to go. And I'm still not convinced that's the case. Like I do feel like it's going to takes two to tango here for anything real to happen. And I, again, just don't think it's as easy as snapping your fingers, but I guess we shall see.
I think the easiest thing is even saying Sheldon Keefe, no longer the head coach, his contract extension hasn't even kicked in yet.
And, yeah. And that's just money.
And yeah, but they've also, how long have they paid the Babcock fines?
They just stopped. Yeah.
They're just getting off the Babcock. And then what? If you fire Sheldon Keefe, you're going to have to pay him too. At some point, you have to swallow the money and pay it regardless. And with a new head at MLSC, I wonder how willing you are or unwilling you are to do that. Or maybe you're willing to just make change big time. It's your first impact, right? Like it's so much coming into what seems to be just a 60-minute hockey game tonight, but that's the way it's been set up all season long. And then for 8 playoff runs with this core, I don't know. I think let's just look at the game tonight. There is a way the Maple Leafs come back in this series. There's a way they win tonight. Then maybe the demons of Boston, which they barely have any. I mean, they blew a reverse sweep last year. If you win tonight and you're Toronto, does that start to, wait a second, if you're Boston, this happened to us last year. Do they even have playoff ghosts? We'll ask Andrew Raycroft. But it's one game sample size. The Leafs can totally win tonight. It's going to be a big mountain without an Austin Matthews, which we don't know for sure, but we're going to find out shortly. With a ailing William Nylander, a Mitch Marner that's still recovering from a high ankle injury. But you still have a bunch of really good hockey players, and you got to hope that they show up.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, there's still the possibility. They still could come back in this series, the reverse sweep, and everything could be good. But how long is that moment? Is that moment fleeting? It was fleeting last year, right? It was a year ago yesterday that the Maple Leafs actually overcame that first round bugaboo. And then it was just as bad or worse when it crashed and burned with the Florida Panthers. So even if they found a way here, it still requires something else after that, which makes it even more far-fetched than it sounds here to come back against Boston.
All right, let's preview this game tonight with Andrew Raycroft of Nesson joining us. Andrew, thanks for coming on. How are you feeling about tonight's big battle with the Leafs and the Bruins?
Well, of course, it's exciting. We still have Leafs-Bruins. It's still Stanley Cup playoffs. And whenever a team has been backed into a corner like the Toronto Maple Leafs have, there's a great opportunity for them to respond. But either way, us in the media world are going to have a story either way tomorrow.
Okay, so let's put you in the Leafs locker room, and we'll start with that side. If you're sitting around that dressing room, whether Matthews is playing or not, and you've got Joseph Woll in net, and you've got a couple guys banged up, like, how are you approaching the pregame speech if you're the Leafs leaders or you're Keefe? You have a mountain to climb, but it's a 60-game sample size. Like, what are you saying to get that team fired up for what seems to be maybe an inevitable loss, but you can't view it that way?
No. And I've been down 3-1 before in a playoff series and didn't think that we were going to lose going into game five. We actually did win game five, but didn't think about the season ending. You think about the process, like, those guys are going in there thinking about winning the first period and surviving the first period and winning the game. There's nothing else that's being thought of. If we're being completely honest in that room, I'd be saying, guys, it can't be any worse than Saturday night. It can't be any worse than what we did on Saturday night and what we dealt with on Sunday between the video of the fighting on the bench and the booing and everything else. Guys, it can't be worse than that. So let's go have fun tonight. Let's try and find a victory. But even if we lose this series tonight, it's not going to be worse than what we dealt with on Saturday. And I think that can be freeing, and I think the Leafs have to lean into that a little bit and that, you know what, go out and play, and you've already kind of seen the worst at this point.
It feels sometimes, Andrew, like Boston was built in a lab to beat the Maple Leafs. Like, everything that they do well is kind of the perfect kryptonite for this Maple Leafs team. I don't know if this is a part of it, but it does feel like the Bruins are able to use the noise around the Leafs to their advantage. Do you see that too?
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, I think I agree. And honestly, it still might go the other way, but I really did think it would be different this season. I was thinking going into this that there's no way that it's going to play to script like it has the last few times they played each other. And here we are, sure enough, it's exactly what it's been, which is shocking to me. And you're right, the matchup for the Bruins, for whatever reason, whether it's Jake DeBrusk, whether it's Jeremy Swayman, these guys that just have a great feel, a great look when they see blue and white. And then, of course, it starts and ends with Brad Marchand. And, and going back through the years, the Bergerons, the Charas, these guys, all they care about is hockey. All they care about is hockey. They don't care if they're famous. They don't care if they're popular. They don't care if they're hanging out with Justin Bieber. All those guys have all cared about is playing hockey and winning hockey games. And I think that's what is why it's kryptonite for the Leafs, because they don't ever think that they're out of anything. And they don't, and I'm saying Bruins organization, culture, they don't care what people say or try and have going on around them. They've gone through it so often that they just don't pay attention to it, and they really don't care what is going on off the ice, because they don't have a life off the ice. It's hockey, and that's it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, you're right. I think they're not paying attention, but at the same time, it feels like they're acutely aware of at least the storylines, and they're able to use it. But again, that just might be, that just might be easy, right? That might just come naturally to people like Brad Marchand, who can take advantage of certain moments, whether it's on the ice or in the media. You said that this has gone differently than you expected, like whether it's the chasm between, whether it's just how the games have gone, what you've seen on the ice and the run of play. But what has been most surprising? Is it that Bruins are exceeding your expectations or the Leafs are failing to live up to what you expected?
And this is, well, one, the special teams. And this is on the Leafs, the PK. The fact that they can't figure out the PK and Sheldon Keefe can't figure, that's crazy to me. And I thought this was going to be different. The Bruins power play was really struggling coming into this. And I was saying there's no way the Bruins power play will go 50% in the first four games. There's no way that's possible. They can't do that again. And sure enough, here we are. It certainly starts there. And then the other, I thought Matthews has looked like a more mature player. I thought we were going to get Matthews game two, and I know he's got stuff going on now, but I thought we were getting Matthews in game two with additional help in other games. I thought it would be very difficult to keep the Leafs under four goals in this series. And again, it goes back to, here we are again, the Leafs can't score in the playoffs. I just thought that narrative, and I thought the PK narrative was going to flip. Still might. It really still might. Who knows what happens tonight, but through four games, it certainly hasn't. And that surprised me.
We know all too well, the Maple Leafs and I guess their fan base also have a little bit of trauma when it comes to being down and losing in these series. But I wonder if there's anything to Boston's psyche from last year. So, like, let's say the Maple Leafs can find a way and win this one. Is there even a little bit of fragility with Boston thinking about, now they've got one leg closer into this. There's a game six or could be a game seven. Or are they just so built on that culture and that in the moment leadership that you don't think that would even start to crack the Boston Bruins?
Well, I think anytime your fragility will be tested if you lose a game five when you're up 3-1. I think there's no team that has done that and hasn't questioned, oh boy, we got to go into their building now. And so it'll be tested a little. I think, from the Leafs side of things, I think they're in a tougher spot because the Bruins lost 3-1 last year. I was trying to think, like, through the last decade or 15 years, what good team and like with a good core that played 2 years in a row together lost 3-1 back-to-back years. So often good teams, whether it's the Tampa Bay Lightning losing and then winning Stanley Cup, like we know all of the stories, right, that everybody loses before they win. This is kind of the same scenario where this group lost, and it's the majority of this group lost just 12 months ago while they were up 3-1 coming home. And I just feel like the Leafs are in bigger trouble tonight because I think the Bruins recognize and have learned from what they need to do, and especially the coaches from last season. So it kind of goes both ways. In that if the Leafs win, then yes, it might put a little bit of that extra stress on the Bruins because of last season. But I think the way the Bruins practiced yesterday, dealt with the day off Sunday, is different than what they had the mentality last season and might make them a little more prepared tonight.
That's so very Leafs that even like a glimmer of hope would be like, no, they're going to be a more attentive team because of what happened last year. It just screams Maple Leafs in so many ways. Okay, so the Leafs are one thing, Andrew, but Florida Panthers would be next. And then a winner of Carolina, New York, if we get there, would be after that. And then, of course, a Stanley Cup final if they get that far. Like, what's the future upside? Do they have as good of a chance as any team here to win a Stanley Cup? Or do you still see limitations with this Bruins team?
No, there's certainly limitations. The 5-on-5 scoring, can they do enough of that against a Florida team that's really good defensively? And assuming, Carolina, the Rangers, those special teams are much different than what we're dealing with in this series from different points of view. But you get out of the first round, anything can happen. And it is a real focus of the players. The first round's one of the hardest. I think this season it might flip into the second round, the way all of these series are matching up, whether it's Van Edmonton, whether it's Dallas, Vegas, and Colorado. Like, we're going to have eight amazing teams in this second round. So, but certainly I don't think the Bruins aren't going to be favored after this. whether it's Florida, whether it's Carolina, the Rangers, whether it's Dallas, whoever from the East or the West, sorry, the Bruins will be playing more of an underdog role if they get through tonight or Thursday or Saturday.
We're chatting with Andrew Raycroft ahead of Leafs Bruins and a bunch of other elimination games on the network tonight. Let's talk about Connor Hellebuyck and the Jets. They're facing elimination against the Avs tonight. I wonder how much, and it's never always the goalie's fault, as you know, how much you'd be shouldering a little bit of that, being down 3-1 when you're the potential Vezina winner and this series is almost out of grasp. How have you seen this one going?
Well, it's kind of similar to me as, you know, Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Tavares, for that matter. I think it's more the big three, and Hellebuyck. Like, these guys all are kind of on the same page in that they have great regular seasons and they continue to falter in the playoffs. And is it just their game's not suited for it? In Hellebuck's case, he doesn't give up straight on shots, but come playoff time, do the better teams move it east-west a little bit more? There's more traffic in front of the net, more point shots, more little rebounds. Is he athletic enough? Is he flexible enough to make the plays that he needs to in and around the net in the playoffs? Because that playoff-style hockey is a little different. So he has an opportunity, like the guys in blue and white, to change the narrative. And it only takes 60 minutes to change the narrative really quickly, especially, as we all know, in Canada. So do they do that? Can they do that? This is a big one for Hellebuyck. If he gives up 4 or 5 again tonight and they lose, it's a real long summer, despite having a Vezina trophy in the cabinet.
So Vegas lost both of its games in Vegas. So it's a bit of a different story now in that Central Division matchup with the Dallas Stars. But I find that goaltending situation pretty fascinating, right? Like Logan Thompson this year, Aiden Hill last year. Is it a coincidence that no-name goaltenders, for lack of a better term, are shining for the Vegas Golden Knights?
Not with their back end, and not with the skill set that their forwards have. And of course, their coach is very detail oriented on the defensive side of things. So, but it also feels right. Like it feels like whether it's this round, and certainly Logan Thompson's been more than good enough, even in the losses, to continue to use the net and have the net. But it feels like if Vegas gets out of this round, we're going to see Aiden Hill sooner than later. You're going to see both goaltenders there, and they've just decided that, and rightly so, I mean, they won doing it, that there's opportunities and that they're not worried about making a quick switch in goal if they feel like it will help this team. But the reality is it's what the $95 or $99 million in front of the goalies can do.
Last one for you, Andrew. Appreciate your time tonight. Oilers not in action tonight, but tomorrow against the Kings, they have the opportunity to put them aside and head into the second round. I wonder for you watching Stuart Skinner and what he's done, especially after last game out, just that 1-0 win and a 6-1 win in the last two games for the Oilers. How far you think he could take this team if they're able to get through this first round?
They're lined up for a long run. Mm-hmm. Because of who they have leading the team. But I think Stuart Skinner learned a lot last season, and going through the playoff run that he did, that was unexpected, and learning from some of those tough times, but still having enough success to not lose confidence. And that's kind of the fine line but you can learn a lot from those losing experiences, and he had enough winning, he had enough success, that he's still confident going into this year. And I think that win in game 4 will go a long way. Like, that carries you through mm-hmm. this round if they win in game 5 and into the next round on that confidence. And no, he just has to do that one time a series, right? Because McDavid's going to have 28 points in the other 6 games of the series. It's that one game. If Stuart Skinner can win one game or be a huge difference maker one game a series, this Oilers team can go far the way the bracket's setting up.
All right, it's going to be a big night ahead. 4 elimination scenarios. We'll see how many teams live to fight another day. Andrew, appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy the game.
You got it. You guys too.
Thanks so much. Andrew Raycroft of Nesson, of course, former NHLer. Leafs Bruins tonight. Bruins not successful in game 5s at TD Garden. So in their last 6 game 5s at TD Garden, They've got a loss, a loss, a loss, a win, and a loss, and a loss. And two of those losses are against the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs are 3-1 in their last four game fives when trailing 3-1 in a series. They came back to force a game seven against Boston, and both in the first round and in the 2013 conference quarterfinals. So it's happened. This isn't the end. We can't write the obituary yet.
Well, let me give you another trend that may or may not matter.
I love trends.
Leafs without Austin Matthews. And again, we're still waiting on official word, but no one's really expecting Austin Matthews to play. A record of 35-19-2, the Maple Leafs. Goals scored per game, 3.21 average. Power play clicking at 29%.
Well, that's all they need is Matthews.
Would you take three goals tonight if you're a Leaf fan? Like the guarantee of three goals without Austin Matthews.
I would take that.
And I guess they couldn't have too many power plays for it to click at 29%. But yeah, there's been success without Austin Matthews. Why that is, not really sure. Can't, though, equate regular season games to playoff games, at least in my opinion, because, you know, goal scoring, definitely harder to come by, at least for this Maple Leafs team. So there are a couple things that'd be like, no, it's not over. But again, we should be using some logic. And the way this series has gone, like, nothing really should push you in the direction of the Maple Leafs. But again, this is a confounding team. And maybe for that reason, that's the best argument they have, is that they don't make sense often, and it wouldn't make much sense tonight.
Okay.
Other than those game fives.
So all of these things stacked up against the Maple Leafs or in favor of the Maple Leafs, nothing matters other than your effort tonight to me. It's you come out, yeah, you can have all these complaints. I mean, we're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. They have a million complaints. They got their third string goaltender and they find a way. You've seen the Panthers, talk about all the injuries that they have. They find a way. There's so much that you can use as an excuse. But tonight, it's really about just working harder and having the passion that unites us all.
Maple Leafs, there you go.
On the rally towels. But yeah, TD Garden, you're far away from everything. You just focus on your game.
I don't think it's save FaceTime. It's just, but you got to do what you can in this moment. Like, I don't think the perception can change with 60 minutes tonight. Clearly, if they win, they get another opportunity to tack on 60 minutes. But it's not about reputations. It's not about next year. It's not about futures. It's got to be about the here and now. If you care, the here and now should be taken care of.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the action tonight. We got a bunch of best bets to preview for this evening. I went with a couple parlays. So it depends on how positive you are. A
couple parlays. Okay.
On things advancing or things ending. I put on my Nostradamus hat to tell you what's in store tonight. So the end of the road parlay, okay? If you think all the teams that can advance are going to do it tonight, that's plus 675. So that would be Boston to win, Vancouver to win, Colorado to win, and Carolina to win. All those games later on tonight will tell you where and how you can watch them. But if you want that all to happen, 675. If you think it's the live to fight another day, you know, you're the positive Polly, you're the Ailish of the show, plus 2645 or 2650, we'll say. That means that all of the teams with their back up against the wall, they win. So choose your own adventure. Those are your two best bets.
And I checked, Nostradamus did wear a hat. Kansas City Royals tonight visiting the Toronto Blue Jays, plus 120 with Cole Reagans on the mound. It is Jose Barrios, so it would be ace versus ace technically. But, you know, Barrios may not be like the true ace. We know Kevin Gausman, right? Just plus 120 on your best pitcher if you're the Royals. I feel like it's worth going that route. And I, frankly, am not as positive you are when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. I think there's a chance this one gets pretty ugly. And why not profit off ugliness? Alt line for the Bruins tonight, minus to win by three, the puck line three, plus 650 to win by four or more, plus 1,000. I could see this one going that route. And if you're a Leaf fan, you might as well throw a couple shekels on that and make you feel better at the end of the night.
Quick thing here. PWHL action is one of the final games here this regular season. If Ottawa beats New York in regulation, they're going to clinch a playoff spot and set up Boston, New York to have that final game to fight for first overall pick. So I like Ottawa in regulation to clinch. And if you're in the Toronto area, Toronto PWHL announced they're going to play two of their games at Coca-Cola Coliseum for the playoffs. So that's exciting. 8,000+ seats. I'm looking forward to getting down to the good old Coca-Cola Coliseum, see the ladies. That's in about a week, but I wanted to make sure people
love heard. The Coca-Cola Coliseum.
Yeah, wanted to make sure everybody heard that. Okay, so quickly, we're going to shift over to Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On Sportsnet, you can watch Hockey Central. They'll be teeing up Leafs Bruins 7 o'clock and then a little later Nashville Vancouver. That's also on Sportsnet. We'll take a quick break and we're going to do doubleheader with John Bartlett and Thomas Drance. That's next on The Fan pregame. We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590. The Fan a little later on. You got four elimination scenarios: Leafs, Preds, Jets, Islanders, all. But they're back against the wall to see if they can extend their series. The first one up there will be Toronto, Boston, 7 o'clock. Nashville, Vancouver, 10 o'clock. If you're looking on CBC, Colorado and Winnipeg, 9:30, and the Islanders and Carolina, 7:30 on Sportsnet 360. Lots to watch this evening, and you'll hear the voice of John Bartlett, who joins us now. John, it's been a while. We miss you from our All-Star game days. How's it going?
Yeah, how's my All-Star team doing here, guys?
We're still a bunch of All-Stars over here. It's all been fun. we're making it through with this Leafs-Bruins series. Been down at the rink a few times, and it hasn't been as fun as it was when we got to be on the call together. But let's ask you about that Jets-Avs series. I know you're going to be up close and personal. Let's talk about Connor Hellebuyck, because he's obviously a major pivot point of this series. We mentioned this to Andrew Raycroft, who we had on just before you, about maybe the culpability that he's feeling on his shoulders when you look at a team down 3-1 in the series. What have you seen in terms of Hellebuyck and his playoff performance through four games?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously it's not to the Vezina level that, everyone would have hoped for to this point. He had a .921 save percentage in the regular season. It's .870 in the playoffs. And if you want to get into the high analytics, in high danger scoring chances, he's around a .773, which is about 100 points below, I think, what his regular season was as well. So, you know, when you look at the Jets, the best defensive team throughout the year, and everyone thought this was going to be a tight battle against Colorado, the high-flying offense with the defense hold up, and it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for the Jets, and I think it's been a struggle for Connor Hellebuyck, but also some of that is the defensive play of the team in front of him as well that hasn't helped and held up their end of the bargain. So, you know, the Rick Bonus says the challenge for the Jets tonight, and it's accurate, is they haven't played their best game yet in this series. So they need to do that at this point. And, you know, I think at some stage, anytime you have a team where your goaltender is a big factor like that, you need them to steal a game for you. So, Connor Hellebuyck, this would be a great opportunity for him at home tonight, is to try and steal a game in this series for the Jets.
Yeah, it seems like Jets head coach Rick Bonus won't just wait for Connor Hellebuyck, though, to try to steal a game. Is there anything that the Jets are going to do or employ differently tonight in an effort to save their season?
Well, yeah. First of all, Justin, a few lineup changes. Cole Perfetti is going to come into the lineup. They're hoping that they could try to generate some more offense. So Perfetti comes in. Colin Miller will come in on the blue line. David Gustafson is back in the lineup. No Vladislav Namestnikov, who took the puck in the face last game. He's got the broken cheekbone and hasn't been able to eat, so he won't be in. And Brendan Dillon, with that nasty gash in his hand, won't play tonight either. So some lineup changes from that standpoint, but also changing of the lines tonight for Rick Bonus, trying to see if they can get something going a little more. And throughout the course of the season, he's done it before, where he's put Nikolai Ehlers up with Mark Scheifele and Gabe Vilardi, and Kyle Connor will slide down with Sean Monahan and Cole Perfetti coming in the lineup. So a little juggle there. And Tyler Toffoli, another deadline acquisition for the Jets, will slide down to the fourth line to start the game tonight. Has one goal in this series, but again, Winnipeg needs to find some offense here and try to get something happening. So not only do they have a little sort of changes in who's coming in personnel, but how they'll deploy them tonight. And honestly, the biggest change, I think, is puck management and being a little more aggressive and quick on the Avalanche. They're so fast, Colorado, that they've got to limit the time and space that they have with players like MacKinnon and Makar. So it's about getting your puck management a little cleaner for the Jets, which doesn't include just turnovers, but I think it also includes on the entries and how you get in. A couple times last game, there were sort of some dump-ins for the Jets that didn't have the purpose or the puck retrieval, and ended up just giving it back over to Colorado and being physical. Rick Bonus had said they lost some board battles that they can't afford to lose. So when they get into those puck battles on the boards, those are fights you have to win. And when you look, the Jets actually have the fewest giveaways in the playoffs, but they have the second fewest takeaways as well. So it's kind of like, it's not that the puck management means all they're throwing and giving it away and awful turnovers all night over and over. It's more about puck management, what they do when they have it. And when they don't, they've got to be better on those 50-50 battles and trying to get the puck back to get some things going. Play Jets hockey that they've played all year, and it's been Colorado dictating the play so far in the series.
So in any series, in any sport, there's generally like a moment that you can kind of pinpoint, not necessarily where things turn, but maybe the defining moment of the series or something that means something more than it did in that moment. And I've been wondering about kind of the fake comeback that the Colorado Avalanche had in game one, where they just started scoring goals, not at will, but when things got a little bit loose. Do you think that that comeback or fake comeback or near comeback has had some sort of effect on this series? Maybe Colorado learned something, maybe Winnipeg felt something, or maybe I'm making too much of it.
No, you know what, Justin, I think you're bang on. You know, a lot of people might have thought, oh, with the awful turnover behind the net in game two, that put Colorado back even with the Jets in that game, and then they went on to win, obviously, and have continued to win since. But I think it's the third period of game one. And the Avalanche kept coming, and they rallied back and nearly tied it. My goodness, if they had tied it 7-7 going to overtime, could you imagine if Colorado then won that game 8-7 in overtime? There's your sweep. But I agree with you. I think it's there. And talking with Jared Bednar today, too, he even said there was a lot he really liked about the team in game one. And he kind of played all the positives on his own team in that game, saying, hey, we lost, but look at all the things we did. We scored 6 goals. Yeah, we had a bad night on the other side of the puck, 7, but look at all the good things we did, and look what we did in the third, and look, how we had the comeback. And this team that beat us all year, and we kind of owned that second half of that game. So I think you're right. For the Avalanche side of things, they'll probably tell you that they turned things around in the third period of game one and haven't looked back since. So this is now Winnipeg's chance. They've got to find a way to grab hold of things here and turn the tide back their way, where they can start to play their more commanding style of hockey.
Yeah, tell us about that Winnipeg environment. Like, the whiteout looks absolutely unbelievable. There must be a little bit of home ice advantage when you skate out and you hear that crowd going that loud and like rabid for wins. So how's it been to be there, to hear that? And what can it do maybe for a team tonight that needs a win?
Yeah, the atmosphere of the whiteout has certainly been awesome, and it's not just in the building, it's out on the street as well and all around downtown, so it really kind of envelops Canada Life Center throughout the afternoon into the game time, and then throughout the night. It's something to witness for sure, and I actually think the Jets were a little nervous in game one for the first 10 minutes because there's just that much energy there, and you have to kind of get used to it. Because it's that intense. That crowd's on their feet and they're going, 10 minutes before they even come out to hit the ice kind of thing. So they've got to ride that. They've got to use that energy. You know, you're back in your own building tonight. And when you think of how the season ended last year for the Jets in 5 games against Vegas and the comments Rick Bonus made afterwards because of their performance in game 5 and everything, if you're a Jets player tonight, you've got to ride this whiteout momentum and you've got to put on a great performance here at home and get that energy from your fans, which I think they'll bring for them tonight, and just, take it one game at a time, the old cliche, but try to ride that energy of the whiteout here tonight and see if they can get themselves back to Denver for a game 6 and then take it from there. But the atmosphere has been electric. It is really intense. It's really fun. So for the Jets fans, they're going to hope that the team can ride off that energy tonight for sure.
Yeah, and Colorado being able to survive that to this point says something about their group for sure. I mean, they're definitely battle-tested, winning a Stanley Cup 2 years ago. They've got guys who have played in a lot of big playoff games. But maybe that is a different task and one clearly, that they've passed. You've seen a lot of teams this year, John. Like, how does this Avs team stack up to the very best that you've seen throughout the season?
Well, you nailed it with the experience, right? So they come in here and kind of have that pedigree of knowing what to expect, not to get too high, too low in the playoffs. They're a great home record, their offense. But I think where they've kind of really stepped up here is when you look at their secondary scoring and the play of Valeri Nichushkin and Arturi Lehkonen. It hasn't been Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar that's killed the Jets to this point. It's been Nichushkin and Lehkonen. So those two have really kind of, they've been great all year, and they've been great in the playoffs before, especially Lehkonen. He's got his history of Stanley Cup playoffs. But, man, those two have been the Jets killers in this series for Colorado. They've really come in and played a big role. So, I think when you look at Colorado and where they stand right now with everything going on in the playoffs, certainly a lot of depth, a lot of balance to have that secondary scoring driving the way, and then knowing that you still have Nathan MacKinnon there, who's I only say he only has two goals in the series, but when you look at how many goals that have been scored in this series so far by Colorado, and MacKinnon only has two, Mikko Rantanen hasn't even scored yet. When you talk about the top line for Colorado, and Jonathan Drouin hasn't played in the series after playing most of the year on that top line. So secondary scoring has been a big factor for Colorado here against Winnipeg, and that's what stacks them up very well here. Between that and their playoff pedigree from winning a cup before to looking like a very good team that also has a lot of offense from the blue line too, and can move the puck well out of their own end.
Last one for you, John, before we let you go. Cale Makar, you mentioned it hasn't been the story of the series, but he definitely had a breakout moment and some big-time moments in this series to this point. What are they saying about Cale Makar? Because it was like a bit of an understated regular season, but it feels like maybe the playoff stage is where he just does his best work.
Yeah, he has found another game and another groove here in the playoffs. You know, 7 points in the series. He's got 20 points in his last 13 games going back into the regular season. So you could tell he's just kind of ramping it up. And, you know, now he's the second defenseman in NHL history with 8 points to the 4 games in a postseason series multiple times, joining Bobby Orr. So we're talking Cale Makar and Bobby Orr in the same sentence. And, you know, that's how good Makar has been. And, you know, it's not even always the points. It's how he can drive the play. When Rick Bowness talking about they've got to stop letting Makar have so much room to move across the blue line, walk across the blue line. He can set a lot of stuff up. He can draw players out of position very well. So, but he's taken it to another level here in the playoffs. And he's a real treat to watch for Colorado. And, yeah, he is such a factor in the game all the time. You have to be aware anytime he's on the ice, and Makar is a special player that way. So, and those are the great players, right? They can have a great regular season, but it's the ones that find that next level, that next two levels in the playoffs, that can really make you a superstar, and that's Cale Makar for sure.
Well, hopefully we get to see a bit more of this Jets-Avs series and more Cale Makar. John, we appreciate your time tonight. Have a great call, and we'll be listening. Thanks so much.
You bet, team. All the best. Take care.
See you soon. John Bartlett, NHL and Sportsnet, calling Jets and Avs. As we mentioned, that one's another Game 5 series on the line for the Winnipeg Jets. That's 9:30 on CBC. Let's go a couple provinces west and just keep ripping around tonight's elimination scenarios. Thomas Drance joins us for set 6:50 in the Athletic Vancouver. Drance, how's it going?
Ailish, Cuthbert, some retro hot stove vibes on your program this afternoon. Yes. I love it.
That's exactly it.
That's so funny. All right, well, hot stove, you got any hot takes? Got some series ending tonight? Or
always.
Are we just cooking a couple game sixes coming? What do you think?
Well, the sun is shining in Vancouver, and my gut says it ends tonight. The Canucks have had an advantage where it counts, principally in net, despite using three goaltenders. Rick Tocchet joking that he's heard his fourth goaltender, Nikita Tolopilo, is good, but he didn't know his name, and he hopes he doesn't have to use him. JT Miller and Brock Besser have this team on their back. Connor Garland's passing from down low has directly led to two game-winning goals, and Vancouver's penalty kill has taken over this series. But if my gut says it ends tonight, my head says otherwise. The Nashville Predators are, frankly, at 5-on-5, the better team in this. With Elias Pettersson on the ice in this series, 50-plus minutes, 5-on-5 ice time, the Canucks have 9 shots on goal. They haven't scored a goal even a single time. Every matchup is a slog for Vancouver, and everything about Nashville's game has been designed to pay off late in the series. Now, the Canucks sort of have the potential to sort of Uno reverse that strategy, as it were, and end the series before it goes too long, before Quinn Hughes takes too many hits. That's the opportunity on hand tonight. Avoid that 8.5-hour round-trip flight back to Nashville for Game 6. Give your skilled players, several of whom look diminished, frankly, at the moment, despite the fact that they're able to sort of string together an incredible comeback in Game 4, not driving play the way we're used to. There's a lot that I think is going in Nashville's favor in this series in terms of a general trend line, and yet they have no margin for error, and the Canucks have an opportunity to, you know, complete what's effectively been a smash and grab to this point. The fact that the Canucks are ahead, given what they've gotten from Pettersson, that they've used three goaltenders, on and on down the list of very Canucks-y things that have gone wrong, is nothing short of incredible.
Yeah, you mentioned the very Canucks-y things, but I think what's inspiring maybe if you were a Canucks fan is like how they use that as a rallying point, not an excuse. And we don't need to cross-compare to another Canadian team that's using some things as excuses, but I just think it's a completely different mindset. Is that coaching? Is that leadership? And how much does that just bring the team closer together to fight against all the Canucks-y things that are happening and still find a way to win?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, is it also that this Canucks team, despite not having made it to this stage of the season with the frequency of Toronto Stars, also don't have the scar tissue of years and years of playoff disappointment? You know, who knows? Like, who knows why JT Miller and Brock Besser have been able to raise their game in a way that Toronto Stars haven't? I do think Vancouver's had a really high baseline in this series. I think one thing that has given them the ability to survive, to stay in some of these games, to keep it close enough that they can mount, you know, a shocking, stellar, unbelievable comeback, has just been their play in the defensive zone. This team is impossible to backdoor. They started, the Predators are an elite shot generation team, and they finally started to like generate in bunches off the rush in game two, especially in the second period of game two. In part, I think, because Quinn Hughes' minutes started to get limited after he took sort of a double hit and appeared to be visibly winded or in some visible distress on the bench. And yet, even when they're giving up those two-on-ones, if you go watch those plays, they're all shots, right? So it's like, what do you want on a two-on-one as a defensive player? You want to at least take the pass away. And so even when this Canucks team has found itself on its heels, even when it's only generated 12 shots in a game the way it did in game three, blue line in, this team's defensive game is so on point that I think it's given them the ability to survive some of the, you know, sort of bad things that have happened to it, the bad bounces, or in the case of this series, for much of it, the fact that Nashville's been frankly better at generating zone time, generating leads, even outscoring goals, like pretty important at 5-on-5 than Vancouver has. You know, Vancouver survived it largely on the back of their principal calling card, which is that this team's able to lock it down defensively, regardless of who's in net and regardless of who's playing well up front. You know, to be totally frank, right? Like Elias Pettersson is struggling more in this series than any Toronto superstar. But right now, he's got enough from this team that's given him the sort of margin for error you need in the playoffs. You know, at some point he could flip the entire story, right? He's one goal away. He's one shot away from totally changing the conversation around him. And in part, you know, this team's still leading 3-1. That moment could be impactful. And it's because of the defensive baseline that this team has and the fact that there's enough going right. Or, you know, I mentioned Garland's passes down low, the penalty kill, Miller and Besser. There's enough going right for the Canucks that they've sort of bought themselves some time, even though some of their most important players aren't driving play or performing up to the level that we're used to.
So is that the crux of the issue for Petey, Drantz? Like, it's just the absence of production, or is there a better theory for what's going on there?
It's the absence of everything. You know, the thing about Pettersson is there's players who drive play, and there's also some players who can finish hyper-efficiently, and Pettersson's one of the rare guys that does both when he's on. When he's on, there's like an imperiousness to the way he looks as he moves about the ice, as he sort of controls the game. You know, like Deep Blue playing chess, it seems like he sees the whole board. And yet, of late, like, you know, he doesn't look right, first of all, physically. The shot doesn't look quite right, frankly. And there's just nothing going on. The two-way results have cratered. The shooting percentage is cratered. His line mate's shooting percentage is cratered. His minutes have diminished. The Predators were hunting Pettersson in sort of a matchup against the Ryan O'Reilly line in game four. You know, there's not a lot there that we're used to seeing from Pettersson. And yet, you know, late in game four, after Hughes makes that preposterous sort of pick off the wall and sends Gustav Nyquist into the nether regions, you know, right before the Canucks level the score with 6.2 seconds remaining, Pettersson's up there and he's looking shot the whole time and just sort of dribbling the puck forehand to backhand, drawing a defender up high. You know, that's the sort of thing, just like cool, calm, collected, threatening, right? That's the sort of moment where it's like you see the flash of what Pettersson can do. It just, it's not being put together consecutively on like heavy shift after heavy shift after heavy shift the way we're used to. Hopefully that can be like the start of something. Hopefully just contributing positively to an iconic goal in Canucks history can sort of jumpstart him. But, you know, honestly, watching him play, I'm worried that physically it might not be there for him right now. So we'll have to see. Hopefully the Canucks can get more from him, though. To this point, there's been nothing there, and that's going to be really difficult. Maybe the Canucks have a fat enough margin for error that they can get through this series, but they're not getting past the Oilers or the Kings, I guess, if Pettersson's not on his game.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next. We're talking to Thomas Drantz of Canucks Talk and the Athletic Vancouver. What's to come, if we want to go there, is likely the Edmonton Oilers. And I thought you raised a really interesting point there with the Nashville Predators' designs to win this late. I think the attrition aspect has to come into play here with the Oilers, maybe not making quick work, but making it look easier than Vancouver's made it look to this point. Like, if it extends beyond tonight, if it extends to 6-7, and even if the Canucks get through, like, do you worry about them just limping into a series with a team like the Oilers, who look like they could, you know, have their way with any penalty kill in the league right now?
Yeah, the Oilers look frightening. I mean, the Oilers are unlucky to have not swept, right? Whereas the Canucks are lucky to be leading in theirs. And so there is a pretty big discrepancy, I think, in how commanding each team's performance has been to this point, even though they've arrived at the same place, up 3-1 with a chance to end their respective series in 5. And this is where the playoffs get kind of fun, especially when you're talking about two Canadian teams on the verge of advancing. Is it's a race, right? Like, it's a race. What's at stake tonight for the Canucks? It's avoiding a 6,500 kilometer round trip and an additional 2 days in Nashville, right? If you're able to close out shop today, you buy some of your players who are banged up, who I'm describing looking a little bit different than what we're used to. You buy them some time to rest up, right? And if you're able to hold serve, if you're able to advance tonight, then you get to sit back at home and watch the Kings play tomorrow and root for the Kings for some reason. Mm-hmm. You get to perhaps buy Demko some time, perhaps buy Pettersson some time, Hughes some time. That's hugely valuable at this time of year and sort of negate some of the attrition. Vice versa, if you lose tonight and you're off to Nashville and Edmonton's now laying in wait, I mean, that's tough. You definitely don't want to play 6 more periods against the Predators, or certainly not 9, plus whatever overtimes come your way, just given the way that their forecheck has played against Hughes, given the way that it's seemed to sap Vancouver's 5-on-5 effectiveness as this series has gone longer. You know, Rick Tocchet described it as not wanting to be desperate tonight. Knowing you want to get business done, but you don't want to be desperate or sort of over-categorize tonight's game as like a must win. But man, it's a high leverage game for Vancouver, especially given the dynamic of that race to the second round that they're now locked into, hopefully, with the Edmonton Oilers.
That would be a really fun series. And I think
let's go.
Canadians would love it. That's game. Well, we got game 5 tonight, Nashville and Vancouver, as you mentioned, 10 o'clock Eastern here on Sportsnet. We appreciate your time, Drantz. I hope you get lots more Vancouver Canucks hockey to follow for the rest of this offseason, or playoffs run, not offseason yet.
Well, we're used to it being the offseason at this time of year in this city.
It might be for us here, so soon. We'll see. All right. Thanks, Drantz.
The crowd's going to be amazing at Rogers tonight, so thanks for having me.
Of course. Anytime. Thomas Drantz. Sportsnet 650 in the Athletic Vancouver. We got about 1 minute here. Did you notice Carson Soucy, who missed the empty net, plays for Nashville?
No, Colton Sissons.
Oh, Colton Sissons. Oh, yeah, Colton Sissons. He's from Vancouver. So there might be some double agent work there. I'm just saying. Looked him up. Oh, it happens to be from North Vancouver. Interesting.
That was, MPP vibes, right?
It was MPP vibes. Yeah, it was good. Okay. Oof. Lots to set up tonight. Go catch Toronto and Boston 7 o'clock. Right up next on Sportsnet, followed by Nashville and Vancouver. Those are both game 5s. Both are elimination scenarios. Colorado and Winnipeg, again, another elimination scenario. CBC, 9:30 p.m. And then if you're looking for the Islanders in Carolina, which we didn't really touch on at all because it feels like Carolina is just going to win that one, we'll see. Sportsnet 360 at 7:30. Kansas City, Toronto Blue Jays, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. How many teams are eliminated tonight, Justin Cuthbert?
Ooh, there's 4 elimination spots. I will say
2.
2.
Right in the middle.
2.
I'm going with 2, and I'm not telling you which
ones. I'll go 3. Break
the tie. Wow. Really, no clean sweep either way.
It could be. I'm not saying which one.
I feel like 2. 2 is a nice admit. Right on the fence. Okay, folks, we won't be on tomorrow because the Blue Jays play in the middle of the day. We'll be back on Thursday. Have a great couple days.